Okay, so we'll start with some parasha. The story of the leadership of Moshe Rabbeinu is an incredibly beautiful story of a rise to what it means to be a Jewish leader. You know, here you have this persecuted nation, Klal Yisrael, is suffering through terrible times, and Moshe Rabbeinu, is approached by the Ribbono Shel Olam. He's hesitant to take the lead, which is always a good quality you want in a leader, someone who doesn't jump and say, "Yeah, I should be the one to lead." You know, that always would give you a little bit of pause. You know, prior to Yom Noraim in Mashul, typically one of the Balei Tefillah or Balei Tekiah will reach out to me and say, "I don't think I'm worthy of representing the Tzibur." It's like, good. Exactly, you know, that's exactly the person that we want doing it. And after some convincing, some convincing from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, ultimately he steps into the role of leadership and he facilitates the greatest miracles ever witnessed in freeing Klal Yisrael, which had been slaved for centuries under the most oppressive and powerful nation in the world. That is the story, that's how we know it, and it is remarkable. The reality was that none of that really happened easily. Moshe Rabbeinu was sent and he failed. He didn't go and succeed right away, and the people weren't buying what he was selling. Vayedaber Moshe Kenel Bnei Yisrael, v'lo Shamuel Moshe, mikotzer ruach me'avod hakasha. They weren't interested. They weren't listening to what Moshe Rabbeinu was saying. He came, galvanized by this conversation with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so now all I have to do is tell them, eke asher eke, shlochani aleichem, and everything's going to be good, and, that there's hope for a brighter tomorrow, and, I'll give some sort of... people were just not interested. Who is this guy? They didn't want to hear what he had to say. Hashem then went with a different strategy. He said, okay, so instead of going to the people and convincing them that, let freedom ring, that it's time for the time for freedom has arrived, go to Paro and convince him. And Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't believe that that's a strategy for success at all. Vayedaber Moshe lefnei Hashem lemor, hein b'nei Yisrael lo shomu elai, ve'eich yishmeini Paro. B'nai Yisrael didn't even listen to me. How on earth is Paro going to listen to me? V'ani aras v'sayim. And I have a speech impediment. I don't even speak well. It's difficult if you look at the Rishonim, how they describe Moshe Rabbeinu's speech impediment, it's funny almost to imagine what he must have sounded like. Meaning they describe what it means to be an aras v'sayim, what it means, which words, which letters, which sounds he was unable to produce properly. So he probably sounded ridiculous. How could Paro listen to me? The people I'm trying to help aren't even interested. The person I'm trying to hurt is obviously not going to be interested. It's not like I'm going to go to Paro and he's going to say, "Oh, freedom! I never thought of that idea. That's a great plan." He's obviously has every reason to not be interested in something like this. So Rashi comments, "Ze echad me'asara kal v'chomer shebetorah." It's one of the 10 times we actually find the kal v'chomer in the Torah. That's the kal v'chomer Moshe Rabbeinu was making. That people who have every reason to believe me don't want to listen, and the person who has everything to lose and has no reason to believe me is for sure not going to want to listen. The problem with saying that this is Echad Me'asara Kal V'Chomer Shebetorah is that the very first rule of Kal V'Chomer is that the Kal must be Kal and the Chomer must be Chomer from all perspectives, right? If you have a Kal that's really a Chomer and a Chomer that's really a Kal, at least from one perspective, then it's not going to work. So it is true that from the perspective of what may be gained by the Jewish people, the Jewish people should be more receptive to Moshe Rabbeinu's message, but as opposed to Paro, who only stands to lose and therefore should be less receptive. But from another perspective, the Jewish people have reason to be less receptive than Paro does. Why? Because the pasuk says why they didn't listen. They didn't listen because of kotzer ruach v'avodah kasha. That was a problem that only afflicted Bnei Yisrael. That was not a problem that afflicted Paro. Rashi says it means that kol mishu meitzer rucha v'nishmasu katzara ve'enu yachol laharich b'nishimasu. They were out of breath. They lacked the emotional bandwidth to consider anything. They were hamsters on a wheel just trying to keep up. They just couldn't think about other things. So it was kotzer ruach, it was avodah kasha. They could barely breathe. They couldn't dream of a brighter tomorrow. Paro didn't have that problem of kotzer ruach and avodah kasha. The Ramban understands that kotzer ruach reflects a sense of yeyush, that they wanted to die. They couldn't think of what tomorrow's going to be. I'd rather there not be a tomorrow than have to experience tomorrow and contemplate what that's going to look like. Paro wasn't experiencing any of those things. And therefore the kasha is a strong kasha. How can you say a kal v'chomer? It's true. From one perspective, Klal Yisrael is more to gain by listening to Moshe. So that's why they should listen to Moshe more than Paro. But Klal Yisrael also has less ability to listen to Moshe. Paro has more ability. Paro is sitting pretty in his palace. He's enjoying himself. He has plenty of emotional bandwidth to deal with whatever you're gonna bring his way. So there are several approaches to this question. I want to share three approaches because I think each one is a critical message. And it's dealt with by a lot of Rishonim, a lot of Achronim. There's probably one of those questions that has dozens and dozens of approaches. We'll go with three. First of all, it is possible that while Bnei Yisrael couldn't internalize the message due to their kotzer ruach, Paro had other, even stronger reasons that inhibited his ability to internalize the message. I mean, what are you going to say? That Bnei Yisrael couldn't internalize the message because they didn't have the emotional bandwidth to do it. It could be that Paro had even less emotional bandwidth, but not because of kotzer ruach, because of a different factor. There was something else that was preventing some other barrier that was preventing Paro from being able to hear this message, from being able to internalize this message. Because it's true that the kotzer ruach is a barrier around the heart, but Paro's barrier is an even more impenetrable barrier. While Bnei Yisrael distressed Paro was not distressed, but he was arrogant. He was a balgaiva. And there's no greater impediment to self-reflection and to thinking about how life can be different and how you can change, and how the circumstances can change, than plain old gaiva. Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't just told to go speak to Paro. Bo daber el Paro melech Mitzrayim. Go speak to the most powerful man in the world. And Moshe Rabbeinu says, look, if kotzer ruach and avod kasha is enough to stop people from being able to internalize a message, being melech Mitzrayim is enough to stop someone from being able to internalize a message. When for somebody to have the courage to apologize or to admit wrongdoing, you know, when someone does that, we should applaud them, because that's a very hard thing to do. It means that the person has a certain sense of humility. Whenever you deal with, obviously now the big story in the Jewish news is this terrible situation with the Kids Speak books and the author of those books. When you speak to psychologists about how does a person do something, how does a person spend day and night giving language to kids' feelings and being able to encourage them to be able to speak and express themselves, and yet at the same time commit these terrible, terrible things against children, against adults, against how does a person like, where does that disconnect come from? So Dr. Pelkovitz and others pointed out, it always stems from one thing. Rav Schechter always points this out. Whenever there's a rabbinic scandal, he always points it out. It always stems from one thing. It always stems from gaiva. And that's why there's a disproportionate amount of rabbinic scandal that happens with extremely talented and extremely successful rabbis. Because if people are koreo mishtachavi to you all day, and they're telling you you're the greatest thing in the world, you start to believe them, and you start to think, well, I'm too big to fall, I'm too big to fail, they can't bring me down, they can't, nothing they say, nothing anyone says can bring me down. There's a sense of gaiva that builds up in a person, and gaiva closes a person's heart from being able to see what's right in front of them, from being able to see right from wrong, from being able to think that to the point where they think that they're not vulnerable to anything. The Ribbono Shel Mechvodo V'atzmo could send a shliach to Paro Melech Mitzrayim and say, Paro Melech Mitzrayim, game over, but he's not going to be able to listen. Because the kotzer ruach of Bnei Yisrael, yeah, that's a barrier. But gaiva is the biggest barrier. We've spoken about this a lot, how gaiva is the avia vos hatumah of midos ra'os. There's no midah ra'a that rivals gaiva, and it's the pesach to just about every other midah ra'a. A second mahalich is that it's possible that the kotzer ruach that prevented the Bnei Yisrael from listening was not Bnei Yisrael's kotzer ruach. It was Moshe Rabbeinu's kotzer ruach. He felt that he was unable to convince them when he realizes that his last effort caused an increase in the workload. It made life worse for the Jewish people. And he wasn't sure of his mission anymore. And if he's too unsure of his mission to convince Bnei Yisrael, he doesn't stand a chance with Paro. If he doesn't really believe, you ever try to sell something that you don't believe in? You know, you try to recruit for a summer program or something that you might work for, but you're not sure yet. You want to see if it works out first, and you know, see how many guys. You can't recruit like that. You got to be all in. You got to believe in it. You have to think that this is it. This is that. Otherwise, it doesn't work. So he doesn't stand a chance with Paro once he has his own kotzer ruach, and that explains why he added Vani Aral Sfasayim. I can come to the Jewish people with my Yiddish accent and they'll understand me. I'll talk like an alter Yid with whatever, you know, Aral Sfasayim, and they'll say, okay, he's one of us. But if even they won't pay attention, then Paro certainly is not going to pay attention. And it's so important for a leader of any kind to be convinced of the importance of the mission. If he has kotzer ruach, he's not going to be able to do it. There needs to be a certain serenity that a leader has in order for them to have the courage to stay the course. You know, I remember when at the height of Corona, when we were talking to Rav Schachter, came out every day with new issues and new problems and new shailas and new, you know, and it was such an emotional time. And he would sit there calmly answering the most heartbreaking and what we thought were unprecedented shailas, although he kept on saying, nah, these are all explicit halachas. It's like, yeah, the halachas we all skipped because they never come up, but like, you know, but he has this memory for detail. So yeah, it's all explicit halachas. But his answer, we asked, like, how do you just like all your friends, you know, all the people your age are dying. Right, that it was crazy what was going on, and he's just unflinchingly, you know, calmly answering and dealing with all the silence. And we asked him point blank, how do you do it? And he answered with a vart from the Baal Shem Tov, somewhat uncharacteristically. He said, "We say Shivisi Hashem Lenegdi Samid, which certainly means that we always envision HaKadosh Baruch Hu in front of us." But an additional level of interpretation, says the Baal Shem Tov, is you have to move the kama. Shivisi, I can keep an even keel because Hashem lenegdi samid. Because I have HaKadosh Baruch Hu in my life, Hashem is always there. So I'm just playing a part in whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu's plan is. And when I know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is running the world, that's a certain emunah bitachon that brings calm to a person. And that, says the Netziv, is the assurance that Moshe Rabbeinu received. Bo dabel el paro is a bit of an odd phrasing. It should have said, bo el paro, the daberi love. So the Netziv comments, el mizeh darish b'sefer lechach tov, shashchina b'kol mako, upirish, bo elai, vani e'yesham. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying, you need a certain sense of calm and confidence that a leader has. Come with me, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says. And then we'll go to paro together. But I'm there the whole time, the Ribbono Shel Olam, Moshe Rabbeinu. And if you have that, that will give you the confidence that you need to believe in what you're doing and to be able to convince Paro. And then a third mahalich. Dasakelim with Bali Atosos writes, Kotzer Ruach Vavod Kasha was not a reason for Bnei Yisrael not to listen. It was a reason for Bnei Yisrael to listen to Moshe Rabbeinu's message. And Adrabi, you're right. Paro didn't have Kotzer Ruach Vavod Kasha. And that's why Paro was less likely to listen. Kotzer ruach v'avod kasha is a reason to listen. The more desperate the situation, the more willing we are to believe that there's hope. It doesn't read perfectly into the pasuk, but from this perspective, the Torah is saying that Bnei Yisrael didn't listen even though they had kotzer ruach v'avod kasha. Had they been comfortable, they wouldn't be interested in leaving. Their hardship is what should cause them to be willing to believe the unbelievable. To believe that, yeah, this can all change. It's one of the great gifts HaKadosh Baruch Hu bestows upon humanity, is the audacity to dream. When functioning properly, we can find meaning and something to live for in the most horrific, horrific conditions. We can believe that which is normally unbelievable because we have this inherent positivity, which is a midah that has to be nurtured, it has to be developed, it has to be built on. But to always see the positive, to always find something to hope for, to yearn for, to always think that things can become better. And that approach also highlights a reason for the unwillingness of Bnei Yisrael to listen. Maybe if they really had enough kotzer ruach, they would have been receptive. Maybe the fact that they didn't listen is really a reflection of a lack of kotzer ruach to an extent. To the contrary, the Rebbe of Bunim says that the greatest challenge was not to take us out of Mitzrayim, but was to take us from sivlos Mitzrayim, from the willingness to tolerate Mitzrayim. Tolerance of evil can be worse than evil itself. And that's what the Das Akeda means. They didn't even listen. Mikotzer Ruach means they didn't even have Kotzer Ruach. And that's why they didn't listen. Halavai, if only they had Kotzer Ruach, maybe they would have listened. If only they would have realized how desperate and terrible their situation was, then maybe they could have had the audacity to dream of something better. But once they were Sovel, there was no need for them to think of something better. There was no need to dream of something better. And that's, you know, a major, major element of, you know, what you know, you speak to rabbis throughout the country, still, ad hayom, is the willingness to tolerate a situation is often the biggest impediment to improvement of that situation. When people think, it's good enough, everything's good enough, and, you know, it's tolerable, and it's okay. Rabbanim throughout the country are still, 2 years later, grappling with the problem of people that are very much enjoying their exile from shul. Yeah, I don't know. You remember that first Shabbos? Remember that you know, when all the YU shuls shut down, and then like a few days later, all the yeshiva shuls shut down. Remember that? That first Shabbos. Remember what that felt like? Remember how distressing that was? You know, how sad it was to not have a Beis HaKnesses available to you, to not have a yeshiva, to not have a Beis Medrash. Remember the tears that we all cried. You know, people got to a point where so well, a lack of kedusha in their lives. And you know, if I could do it on Zoom, why do I need to be in Beis Medrash? And if I, you know, if I could daven in my living room, you know, or my backyard or whatever, they got to a point where there's so well, a lack of kedusha. And you know, Kodesh Baruch Hu unfortunately took away a lot of kedusha from us in the form of very great tzaddikim. And the response should be one of kotzer ruach, that we just can't take it anymore, that we need to draw ourselves closer to kedusha, and then we come, we dream of something better. So I think all three of these messages are critical for everybody, particularly for the future rabbis of the world. Is again that number one, there's no greater impediment to a person's success and to a person's ability to contemplate, to internalize, to think, than, you know, to think honestly, than a sense of gaiva. A sense of gaiva is the absolute worst thing. And second of all, that we have to have confidence in what we're doing. We have to believe in the validity of our life path. I think that's a major part of the problem of, you know, there's a crisis right now in the world, and it's not just in the modern Orthodox world, it's in all of from Judaism right now, including Hasidim and Yeshivish and everywhere, where there's a lack of people going into chinuch, going into teaching. I think part of that is a lack of passion about the mission, a lack of passion about, like, what, you know, what this means for Klal Yisrael. And we're all going to pay the price, because obviously the fewer people that go into such avodas hakodesh, then, you know, obviously all of our children are going to suffer from that. But the lack of passion, the lack of just like belief in the mission, I think is a major, major issue. The lack of idealism, of like, you know, believing that we can make a difference in the world. How many people think, you know, okay, I can't really do anything anyway. I'm not going to be effective anyway. You know, there are plenty of people in my, back to, you know, my day, that had every reason to believe that they can't make a difference in the world. And some of them were very successful in making a difference in the world, because somehow they convinced themselves that this mission is too important. And then, of course, the third message, that sometimes a person has to feel a sense of desperation for more, a sense of longing for more. And, you know, whatever the issue is, you know, one of my pet peeves now I don't love to use these divisive terms, but in the modern Orthodox community, is like the total comfort level with listening to a shir being the totality of a person's Talmud Torah. And that's like, you know, how does a modern Orthodox rabbi, half you are going to be rabbis, right? So you're going to measure success by how many people are at your shir. That's what Talmud Torah looks like. You guys all learned in yeshiva. You know what a Beis Medrash looks like. It's not someone getting up and saying a lecture. Beis Medrash looks like there's people knocking away and learning and fighting and arguing and going b'chavrusa, going at it. Why did a segment of Torah Judaism decide at some point that, okay, if we have good sheer attendance, or, you know what, not even attendance, we get a few people on the Zoom. You know what, not even that. If we have enough hits on YU Torah, you know, then that's success. That's success. That's not success. It's the beginning of something that's a supplement to someone who's already a Ben Torah, who's already learning properly, who's already doing something. We can't be sovel that. We can't be sovel that definition of success. We have to dream for more. We have to hope for more. We have to push for more. That's our job. That's, you know, you guys are young. That's going to be your job going out into the world, is to push for more, to push to become Tamid Chacham and Masmidim. And it's not easy to do. You know, you read the most recent surveys, modern Orthodox people make a lot more money than Yeshivish people do, probably because of education or whatever, but also because you end up working more hours to keep up with that lifestyle that you have to have. And because you're working more hours, that means less night seder, less of a chance of possibly having a night seder. So we have to rethink our priorities a little bit. We just can't, it can't be an acceptable thing. It can't be something that we're so well. We always have to be striving for greater levels in Limud HaTorah, and Limud HaTorah in an active and a serious way, long term. Okay, let's start.